Warning, there's too much casual cursing to try to bleep out for this episode. Sorry.
Welcome to Your Music Saved Us, where two friends blast ourselves into the past to relive and recontextualize the alternative Christian music we grew up listening to in the 1990s. I'm Jay.
I'm Clifton.
And we have a special guest with us this week. Special guest, who are you?
Hey, my name is Dan Friesen. I'm one of the hosts of the Knowledge Fight podcast, but more importantly to this show, I was the bass player in a Christian ska band when I was, let's call it 16. We were called the Detonators, and we spelled it D dash the word tone dash eight. Dash RZ.
Wow.
Yep.
I would never have gotten detonators out of that. Good thing you said it out loud.
It was a little stupid, and we only had zero songs, and we never performed, but we tried.
But you had a name for the band, so that's something.
Yes.
That's where you always start. You never start with songs.
No. We had the idea of being a Christian ska band, and we had me on bass, we had a drummer, we had a guy who could play guitar, and we had a vocalist. We had no horns. We could not find anybody who played horns. It was a disaster, but it was ambitious for some little high schoolers.
I was in a punk band in high school, and we did a few ska songs, and I always tried to find someone to play horns, but horn players are weird. They're few and far between who are comfortable enough to not just read off of sheet music. So
I think young horn standouts are rare.
Yes, that's probably true.
the badass horn players are did high school.
Well, true. They probably were at some point, but
true.
So, okay, speaking of horns, speaking of ska, what are we listening to this week?
We are listening to an EP. I don't understand why it's an EP and not a full album. Can't you just write more songs and make a full album? I don't understand what nonstop touring has to do with not doing a full album. Anyway, we're listening to Quantity is Job One by Five Iron Frenzy.
Take us back a little bit. Tell us about Five Iron Frenzy.
All right. So because we're going to do other albums by Five Iron Frenzy later, I'm going to have a little bit of fun here. And I've pulled together the history of Five Iron Frenzy solely based on the FAQ from their website, the first time the Wayback Machine archived their website, which is right as this album came out.
Wow.
How about that?
What good timing.
I know. So, first question. How did you meet? Reese and I, this is Keith talking, have been friends for like 10 years. We met at church. We met Micah about 7 years ago. He answered a Guitar Player Wanted ad we had put up in our local area music stores. Reese met Scott in Greeley, Colorado while he was going to school up there. We met Andrew at a Prayer Chain Starflyer 59 show, and then we were looking for horn players. We thought this would be very difficult, but Micah said that Micah had a cousin that played sax. That's where Jeff the Girl came in. And Scott mentioned that he knew a trumpet player named Nathaniel. That was Brad. I think his name is actually Nathaniel Brad. And Reese and I met Dennis through our church. Question number two, where'd you get your name? We got the name for Five Iron Frenzy from a roommate of most of ours. He was kind of paranoid and afraid that if he went outside on this particular night, he was going to get jumped by some people. He had a golf club to defend himself, and he said something to the effect of it being like putter mayhem. Scott looked at the golf club, and at the golf club he was holding, noting that it was a five iron, and said, no, more like Five Iron Frenzy.
That's a violent backstory for a Christian band.
And putter, their name. Putter mayhem, I mean, you know, we could do something with that.
That's a Christian swing band.
There you go.
There we go. How old are you? This is great because I like to go over the edges of everyone anyways. Reese, who does vocals, is 25. Keith on bass is 26. Dennis on trombone is 28. Andy on drums is 24.
Wow.
Scott on guitar and backing vocals is 22. Micah on guitar is 22. Jeff the girl, who's on sax, is 21, and Brad on trumpet is 21.
So two of the horn players are 21. I have to say, I'm more impressed now, and I even thought the horn parts were good. That, wow, okay.
I know, and this is their third album,
right?
You know,
It's tough to contextualize, because like at this point I would have been like 15, 16. and now that I'm in my, you know, mid-30s, looking back on them being in their early to mid-20s is shocking to me.
And depressing.
Yeah. But, yes. Much how I look at like the youth group leaders and like K-Life leaders that I had. Now that I'm in my 30s, I look back on them and I think, boo.
How long have you guys been together? About 3 years. Why an EP and not a full-length album? Well, we've been kind of busy this year. Lots of touring. Our first European tour, the Ska Against Racism tour, and lots more tours. We already this year have played in shows in 28 states and 3 countries. Then he goes on a bit. Then he says, what does an EP stand for anyway? Either you guys know what an EP stands for?
I believe it's extended play. Is that right?
Way back. That's what I thought too.
Yeah, that's correct. Extended play. Oh, that's all I had. Sorry. Okay, so I did want to mention, though, that before this EP, Five Ryan Frenzy had two albums out, Upbeats and Beatdowns in November of 1996, and our newest album ever in November 1997. And then this album, Quantity's Job 1, came out in November 1998. So they're really in a tight timeline there for every year in November.
Got to get it out. Got to get it out for Christmas gifts.
Oh, that's a good idea. Right before recording this album, they toured with the Ska Against Racism tour as the only openly Christian band.
Were there some crypto Christian bands?
So I watched an interview with Reese, and he said that everyone in the bands that on that tour were better Christians than the people in the Christian bands they played with quite often. So
Wow!
I don't think he meant that in a they're Christians sort of way, but in like a
there's a lot of Philistines kind of way.
But like in a charitable and loving type of way.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because the way I heard it, like coming from like doing stand up, you know, you hear a lot of stories about like clean comics being much larger creeps than than some of the dirtier comics. I was wondering if he was throwing shade at the insiders or.
He said both the insiders and the Supertones are good guys.
Okay,
they did say that there's just like so much money involved in the Christian music scene that it was just. He said it was obscene. Yeah,
I could see that. It's weird to think about since it's such a niche market, but
yeah, exactly.
That's that nut I was trying to crack back in high school, trying to get in on that that cash cow.
There's so much money there if you can get signed with Tooth and Nail. Mm-hmm. All right. So in an interview with Band Doppler, Reese talked a bit about Quantity's Job 1. Right about the time it came out, he said the reason we just did an EP is that we've been touring so heavily that we haven't had time to practice and write stuff. We switched distribution from Warner Brothers to EMI, and the EMI guys wanted us to put something out. They wanted us to do something because Ska Mania was going to be huge. So Ska Mania is a tour they went on right after this album came out, and that's where the big tour where the Insiders, the Supertones, and the Five Iron Frenzy were on a whole tour together.
I think I went to that tour.
Really?
I think so. I know I saw the Supertones and Five Iron Frenzy together, and it might have been with the Insiders if that was... the tour around this time. I think I was there.
I was supposed to go to it, but I smarted off to my parents right beforehand, like right before I was leaving. Like I was gonna get in the car and leave. And I smarted off to my parents. That's the only time they've ever done anything to me, like to punish me. And I got grounded and I couldn't go to it. Yeah.
No Christian ska for you, young man. I think I went to a tour date in Kansas City. I think that sounds like what it was. Because I know it was a little bit of a trip. And all of the Five Iron Frenzy members were dressed in Star Trek uniforms.
Yeah, yes, that's this tour. Yes, nice.
Yeah, that's one of the big memories I have of them all. Like, they were very goofy.
Yeah, but anyway, so because they're doing that tour, the EMI guys wanted them to put something out, and they said they'd had part of Evil Plan written, so they wrote everything in 2 weeks for this EP. They wrote and recorded everything in 2 weeks.
That's incredible. They're in their mid-20s and they wrote that album in a few weeks. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's good.
And also, I know, like, it's not like a 4-song EP, you know?
No.
There's 7 or 8 actual songs on this.
There's 6 original songs on this thing. I did the counting.
Well, there's one that's a cover.
Right.
Yes.
I think it's also pretty consistent too. It's not.
Oh yeah.
It's yeah. Well, anyway, I'm sorry. I don't want to jump the gun.
Well, let's get into it. Okay. Oh, and the last thing, I explored the Five Iron Frenzy website that was on the Wayback Machine, you could get an @fiveironfrenzy.com email address. All you have to do is email them and ask. Isn't that crazy?
There you go.
Wow. I'm surprised I didn't do that.
Yeah, I know.
Clifton or Dan, and Clifton, you already mentioned this a little bit. I mean, getting like basically grounded and not getting to go to the show, but any other memories either of you have about Five Iron Frenzy around this time period?
I mean, one of the largest memories I have is just people making fun of me. Because I was of the age where like ska wasn't that cool. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of it that was kind of cool, maybe, but it was only within like kind of an edgy, punkish kind of area. That kind of, like, if you're throwing horns in, like, you know, if you like Operation Ivy, maybe you're all right. Okay. You know, but like if
interesting.
Boss Tones might have been right on the cusp.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so liking ska was not cool. And then liking Christian ska was even further not cool. And so I remember having to keep it a little bit, not under my hat, but like I certainly didn't want to be like going around the school yelling about Five Iron Frenzy.
Yeah, okay. You weren't wearing band shirts to school.
Probably not. Although I did wear like weird Christian parody shirts, like right. Subway. They had one that was God's Way.
Oh yeah,
yes.
I wore shirts like that. Unfortunately,
yeah. The Reese's shirt that says Jesus instead.
I think I had that one.
Exactly. Yeah, me too. Yeah, exactly.
Sprite, and it was like Holy Spirit.
Yeah, and then maybe the No Fear, was that too late for you?
I'm not sure, but I did have a New World Order from the pro wrestling. It was nothing without God. It was like Ooh. NWG instead of NWO. Oh my God.
You guys remember God's Gym, right? Instead of Gold's Gym. You know, did Ooh, we no. see that one? That was an early one.
No, I didn't see that one.
How did they not get sued? How do the people
make these? That is a huge question. Because everyone's scared to sue Christians. They think they're going to be labeled like persecutors or something.
Yeah. It's clearly infringement though.
Right. And the only way to uphold trademark is to actually sue to enforce trademark. And if you don't sue to enforce trademark, you can actually lose your trademark. So not suing them is actually a very calculated decision.
Mm. Wow. So that means that probably any of those shirts that got parodied, you could just steal those trademarks.
There's precedent. What are they going to do to you?
I will tell you, I did have a Five Iron Frenzy shirt probably about this time period. It was blue and it was the Chuck Taylor All-Star logo, but like with Five Iron Frenzy written around it, and it said Combat Chuck instead of Chuck Taylor, and I thought it was very cool, and I definitely wore it to school. So,
but you didn't listen to Five Iron.
I did. This was probably, I think this is the last album I owned by Five Iron. I think after that, I kind of got more into like emo and that kind of stuff.
Me too. This was my last Five Iron as well.
I think I might have messed around with all the hype money can buy, but it might have been like that. This is right around where the wave broke, I think, for sure.
Yes, definitely so. Yeah. Yeah. And Dan, my experience is very different than yours, because at my high school, the Christian ska scene was the cool scene. It was not the, but this is North Texas, you know, so.
Still, even in North Texas, that sounds absurd. What about Buck? Did they listen to Buck?
Right. I don't know. So, I wanted to talk about that a little bit because, so, you know, as this album came out, this, like I said, this is kind of towards the end of my love affair with Five Iron Frenzy and ska in general. Mm-hmm. So I think this is the last album of any of the big three that I listened to, because I did not listen to Chase the Sun. I only really ever listened to the first Insiders album.
Yeah, I don't think anybody listened to anything past that. I mean, they mostly did covers, right? Wasn't it a lot of covers?
Yeah, they did two praise albums.
I think that was the thing. They did that Skalleluja and possibly another one, and then maybe put out an independent one. But by then, I feel like all the fans had kind of, you know, left. Yeah.
I mean no disrespect to Insiders when I say I don't think anyone did. It was my experience that the clique that I ran in, or like my church, it was... They got over it pretty fast.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, but okay. So I'm going to list some bands here. Okay. So these are the bands that I kind of started exploring around the time. The Israelites, Frito Boat, the Skedaddles, Big Dog, Small Fence, Buck. So we got a Buck I'll mention.
Sure.
Already.
Sure.
Any of those familiar?
Other than Buck, I would suspect you made up all of those. I don't think I remember any of them.
No, those are all, yeah. So, and there's also some compilations around the time. We talked about one of them already, which was
Skanktified.
Skanktified. Yes. Which is where I found several of these. I think that's where I found the Skedaddles and Big Dog Small Fence.
Probably Frito Boat too.
Yeah. I didn't find them on there, but yeah. So first off, they spell their name F-R-E-E, like free, instead of the way the chip. But I also learned while doing research for this that a Frito Boat is like a little paper plate thing that you put a Frito chili pie in.
There you go.
Yeah.
This is educational.
Yes. So, yeah. So, and this was also around the time that Less Than Jake's Hello Rock You came out. And that like changed my world for kind of punk and ska listening to at the time. And that was much more just pulled into that world.
Is that the one that has Johnny Quest thinks we're sellouts? Is that the album?
I think so. Yeah.
It's a good song.
Yes. Yes. That's that album. Because I wasn't on Passcore, which was one before that, right?
I think so. I think that's right.
Yeah.
What was that Christian swing band?
The W's.
That's right. That was about where I think I started to get mad once swing started to become like a little popular.
They're going to enter our story here pretty soon.
Oh,
actually.
No. The evil W's.
Anyways, my memories of this time is I have a very specific memory of sitting in my car, listening to this album and not wanting to go into school for some reason. I don't remember why. I just didn't want to go into school yet. I just remember sitting and there. I remember it happening for days at a time, like where I would just not want to go into school and I would be listening to this album. Yeah. No, there's no there's no end to that story. That's just what it was.
School sucks and ska rules, man.
That's true. That's a good end.
Yeah, I feel like I've sat in my car many times and had that thought, just not necessarily with this album. Maybe with Silence, you know, or before work. Maybe every day. Anyway. Yeah,
school sucks. Silence rules.
So in my mind, though, things that stood out on this album in my mind, even to today, definitely Sweet Talking Woman cover from ELO. Even to this day, that's my favorite like rendition of that song.
Wow.
Because it's a great rendition. I did remember Dandelion, the song, but I didn't remember anything about it until I heard it again. And then, but my two ones that stood out to me was My Evil Plan to Save the World and Get Your Riot Gear.
Yeah, Dan, was there anything that like you remembered before you listened to it? And also, let me ask you, when was the last time you think you listened to this before now?
The last time I listened to this whole EP was probably 15 years ago or something. It's been a long time. But My Evil Plan to Save the World and Dandelions were two songs that I still remembered and sometimes would put on playlists of things. Yeah. So I had listened to those songs within the last few years. And in fact, what I had a really visceral experience having, like, I listened to Dandelions for the first time in years while I was at the gym. I'd put it on a playlist. And so I was maybe half an hour into the bike ride and I was pretty exerted and that song came on and I just started crying on the bike because it brought back all this, like this visceral feeling about, about the like younger days and what have you. But I'm shocked to hear Clifton, you say that Sweet Talking Woman is a standout track, because for me that is a skip.
Really?
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, that's a zero.
Cretans. Jeez.
And I'll tell you, One Girl Army for some reason for me was the thing that I remembered. Like if I had looked at the title tracks before listening to this again, that would have been the one I was like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I kind of remember that one. So
yeah.
I had a complicated relationship with that song because I hate the vocals at the beginning, but I like everything else.
I think that let's get talking about it because I have a lot of thoughts about that song.
Well, okay, yeah. Let's start. The first song is My Evil Plan to Save the World, which you both mentioned. So let's jump into it.
Woo. I'll let you start, Dan, since you want to talk about this song.
I just think it rocks as a opening song on an album. Like it really gets it hits hard from the beginning. It has some energy to it, and it's not preachy. It's not like, you know, a lot of Christian albums can have a tendency to turn off a non really Christian listener. Yeah. And My Evil Plan to Save the World has, like, you know, it has some Jesus-y vibes, maybe, yeah, but it's not like, I don't know, it's not like delirious or something.
Right.
I agree. I think that's something that Fire and Frenzy does well in general, is that they're able to be Christian without being like, in fact, when they were talking about that Rock Against Racism tour, they said that when they went on that tour, that all the other bands were like really surprised, like, oh, you know, we thought having a Christian band on the tour, they'd be like knocking us over the head with their Bibles the whole time, but you guys are really cool.
I think that's something that I realize in hindsight, like listening back to this, was like, they were the kind of Christians that I wished I was surrounded by when, yeah, I was in church. And I think I might have had a better experience if I was around people like Five Iron Frenzy, as, right, opposed to the people at my mega church.
Yeah, me too.
Well, and I think it was hard, like, to even imagine that for me at the time, because it was like, either you're Christian or you're not. There's not really any in between, mm-hmm, you know. So just kind of these people that are like well adjusted, you know, kind of fairly normal, but just happen to be Christian in this band. That I don't. Yeah, I don't think I could have understood that even if I'd known them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so much of their music is about, like, the positive parts, yeah, of, like, say, God or Jesus, as opposed to, like, the one thing, I know you guys did an episode about this, but, like, the song that I hate the most from my time in Christian times is the Newsboys, They Don't Serve Breakfast in Hell. Like, I hate that song because, uh-huh, it's so negative. It's so much, yes, fear. Like,
right,
you go to hell and then you don't get the things that you want. Like, fuck that. I don't want any part of that kind of the religious message. Or is something like so much of Five Iron Frenzy is like, there's love and,
yeah,
it's a celebration.
First off, go back and reread the lyrics to that song because they are weird. And they seem to promote, like, live now and like, have your fun now, because there is no breakfast in hell. It's weird. But
it's more like get your jollies in.
Yeah.
It's not like live piously because we have breakfast in heaven.
go reread the lyrics to that song. They are, because it surprised us when we did it, that this was not that. Because when you hear a song by a Christian band, you're like, well, they're saying, you know, don't go to hell because there's you're not going to have fun there, basically. You know, it's going to be horrible. But that is not what that song is talking about.
Oh, wow. That was the message I took from it in younger years. I it's been too painful to try and revisit because, right, I hate, yes, that song.
I know, me too. But it was hard for me to revisit too. But when we did, it was very entertaining.
When I went to camp, they would blare that over the speakers, oh, yeah, to wake us up. And so just it triggers me back to those days.
I think the song, just on a side note, speaking of Christian camp, that I cannot, like, I'd be happy if I never heard again for the rest of my life, is Audio Adrenaline Big House. I don't know if you guys had to endure that at camp, but that's the one that...
That's funny. So going back into this, I had the memory that I thought when this album came out, I was like, this isn't as punk as edgy as the previous Five Iron Frenzy stuff. I remember thinking that listening to this album. But then this song starts and I'm like, oh, was I crazy? This is punk as fuck. Like, I mean, this is great. I don't know what's... Anyways, this song does rock though, and I don't know what I was thinking this wasn't punk, because this is great.
Yeah, and it even, like, that first song, like, it even gives rise to, like, some reasons that people can't believe in God, you know?
Yeah.
Starving children in pain. You can't believe in that God. The world's not spinning your way.
Like, the pain in the world and stuff like that. Starving children, mm-hmm, in pain. You can't believe in that God, you know? Like,
yeah.
That's pretty damn edgy for Christian bands.
I know. At that time, I'd probably only heard, like, Pedro dealing with that kind of stuff. You know, Pedro the Lion.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you're right. But even then, it kind of does give a pat answer to the problem of evil here. Because it's just like, my planet probably sucks because God's plan is probably better.
Yeah, it's not a deep philosophical tract, that's for sure.
So there's even a note in the liner notes on this that says, I know this song is kind of hard to understand, so without spoon-feeding you answers, it's about anyone that loses their objectivity to their human nature. It's about all of us that ever thought that our small minds could come up with a plan greater and more perfect than God's.
Clifton, I will agree with you. In my memory, I was thinking Five Iron is kind of lost their edge and wasn't as fast or as heavy as even like that first Supertones album. But then I listened to this and I'm like, what was that? Yeah, my memory is off on this as well. But speaking of the content, you know, remember on their first album, the very first song, and I apologize, I don't remember the name of it, but I mean, that chorus is basically like rape and kill and steal. We can, what is it? Something we can justify anything we feel. I mean, talking about basically like Manifest Destiny and like
the Old West.
Yeah. Like that. I mean, I remember hearing that and being like, what? This is a Christian band? Like, okay, something different's going on here. So I mean, I think you see that again on the CP. They're not afraid to tackle that. And they talk about, we'll get to it in a minute, but like police brutality actually, like later on this, like what?
It's a very salient album for 2020, 2021.
For real.
Yeah. The one nerdy thing I do want to mention here is that the ska upbeats on this for the guitar is, in Five Iron Frenzy always did this, where the sound that you hear is more like the percussive sound of the pick scraping against the strings. And like sometimes they actually play the notes, sometimes, but not most of the time.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I always wondered what their second guitar was doing. And I think that one guitar is just scraping and the other guitar is sometimes playing notes or doing other things. Yeah.
God, I want that gig. That would have been a good gig.
Just scraping. Yeah. You don't have to write. You cannot know how to play the guitar still do that.
Dan on guitar scrape.
So the second song is All That Is Good.
So I want to talk about this one and not so much because I want to talk about the song itself, because I want to talk about what the song is about. This song is, and let me get into the lyrics here.
Where does the misunderstanding come from? Demanding that we be outstanding and then some. Perfection never was a requirement. Although some might say we desired it. So then for times when things get old, I might get sick.
And this is a memory that I have of the time, was that for some reason I always had like this empathetic feeling that Five Iron Frenzy took the, I don't know what you say, the criticism of their fans, or maybe even gatekeepers pretending to be fans. I always felt like they took like their criticism more heavily than most bands at the time. They often got accused of, you know, not preaching enough on stage or preaching too much on stage, you know, because they're the band that they would get yelled at, shut up and play sometimes, you know, but they're also the band that people would be like, why'd you stop preaching? This kind of mindset that they have, and we've already started talking about this, where they're just, I think they're a very conscientious band, right? They're probably one of the more progressive bands in the music scene, in the Christian music scene at this time.
I can't come up with another example of someone who's more, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and so I want to revisit another part of their FAQ that I didn't mention earlier. At the time, they talked about having influences such as Madness, English Beat, NoFX, Skink and Pickle, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, and Operation Ivy. And I don't know if you guys know this, but none of those are Christian bands.
No.
Yeah.
NoFX, especially.
Yeah. All right, so this is on their FAQ. I think you guys are a great band. I'm not trying to be a jerk and judge you or anything, but I don't understand how you can be so on fire for the Lord and at the same time listen to bands like NoFX. Doesn't that bother your spirit? This is Keith responding again. He says, I think that you can listen to people who you disagree with. Just like not everyone in the world has the same opinion, I think it's good to see other people's views. I think NoFX actually have some pretty good points. They also have a lot of unneeded crudeness and profanity, but not more than I'm used to hearing at work or school. I don't think it's at all wrong to listen to people who have different opinions than you, as long as you know what you believe. But if someone thinks that it's the best thing for them not to listen to secular music, that's something for them to take seriously with God. There are certain movies, books, albums, which I won't partake in, but that doesn't mean I can say that all Christians should avoid them. Maybe someone else has no problem with it. And I think that kind of thinking is something that most evangelical teens, probably because we were being taught it by evangelical adults, could not comprehend at the time.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember this just sort of sparked in my mind. I liked the Christian ska, and I liked Five Iron Frenzy and Supertones in particular. And the youth group that I was in at my church, the band leader, he was opposed to Christian ska. And I think some of it is because of this kind of sort of grayish world that they are fine living in. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting into an argument with him one time, and he was like, "There's only one Christian ska song. There's only one." And I was like, What are you talking about? What is it?" And he's like, "Well, it's You Are the Devil and the Devil is Bad." And that was the W's. And I'm like, "That's swing. That's not a
swing
even
song." Yeah.
And it's that song is so concrete. It's so like, you're the devil. The devil is bad. Black, white. Mm-hmm. No need to think about things. No need to wrestle with anything.
Yeah.
Whereas there's abstractness to something like Five Iron Frenzy. And I think that, you know, the adults who were teaching us just didn't have the ability to wrestle with that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, and this is a common criticism, so it's not original to me, but, you know, just American evangelicalism is so concerned with avoiding sin that at that time period, and maybe to today, but I just don't have as much experience with it today, that it forgets that Jesus socialized with sinners. And I assume that Jesus didn't socialize with sinners by saying, like, "Touch your nasty pie holes, because I'm not going to be spoiled by the filth that comes out of your mouth."
You wouldn't have been hanging out with those sinners for very long if he was.
Did either of you have, though, a conversation like this, though, either with your friends or parents or somebody at church? I feel like we talked about this kind of stuff all the time.
Constantly.
What do you mean?
Just about, like, is it okay to listen to music that's not Christian? Those guys you know, trying to process. You'd see the bands that you, maybe Christian bands you like in a promo photo wearing like a NoFX shirt, and you're like, "Can I listen to NoFX?" You know, trying to figure it out.
Oh yeah, definitely. Those conversations were all around.
And for me, like, I was in Star Trek fandom, so that was even a whole other thing. You know, that maybe that's your religion. So yes, constantly. I remember these conversations.
There's a lot of things I was drawn to, too, that I was just not able to explore, like Magic the Gathering or Dungeons and Dragons. These kinds of things that my nerdy brain wanted to get into. And just like the people that I was surrounded with, like almost all of my social network was church friends. And, you know, it was so like, no, you can't. It's like how some people think about touching a Ouija board, you know.
Right.
Like, you play Magic the Gathering and your soul is in trouble.
Yes.
Later in your 20s, people mention it and you have no idea what they're talking about because you can't draw on any of that.
And I'm jealous. I wish I had it.
Like I know the name Magic the Gathering, but I think it's a card, like it's played with cards, but I don't know anything beyond that.
I know there's mana. That's it. That's where I check out.
But for this reason, I'm kind of enjoying the several podcasts that are doing D&D type stuff because it's fun to actually get exposed to that after missing that, I guess, kind of missing the peak point in my life where that would have been a thing.
Yeah, I feel like my 40s is going to be just nothing but tabletop games.
It's a good time for it because you can't do anything else. So,
yeah,
as someone who just turned 40, you know.
So jumping back to the song itself, we kind of talked about like the lyrics and the meaning, but musically, any thoughts on that?
From my end, I think it's a fine song, but this was also one that I skipped.
Okay.
This isn't my favorite on the album. I honestly, when I went back and listened to it, I didn't really even remember it.
Really?
I don't think it stuck out very much in my memory.
It wasn't one that I remembered before going back into it, but when the second I heard it, I remembered it. So I have a habit of removing the vocals from songs and listening to the albums with nothing but the music, because there's this great lead part in this song that I want to share. It's a fun song. It's a rocking song. I think if anything, the kind of blandness of the vocals in this song kind of take away from it, in my opinion.
You know, one other thing I'm noticing in the booklet, the lyrics were actually written by Jeff the Girl.
Jeff, yeah.
you know, and the music by Scott. And normally it looks like Reese writes most of the lyrics. And I did notice that when I was re-listening to this now, I was like, whoa, these lyrics, like just the way it kind of is paced and the mm-hmm. just the vocabulary, this is not a normal kind of Five Iron Frenzy sounding.
It is though, because song. Jeff writes songs on every album and you can go pick them out pretty easily if you know her writing style.
Uh-huh. I'm going to have to look back then.
Yeah.
Also, she has a newer project not too long ago.
Does she?
I think it's called The Fast Feeling.
Oh.
And it's like a sort of electronic synthy thing. There's a couple of great songs on there. And they're again in that sort of nebulous, is this Christian? Is this, it's not preachy, but it seems like right. there might be something going on. I really like it. That's something I discovered not too long ago. And I was like, wait, this is Jeff the girl? What the fuck? Pardon my French. I'm not sure if I can
you
curse.
Can.
Of course you can.
Okay.
Oof. Well, okay. Speaking of like Christian songs, can we go to the next one, Dandelions? Mm-hmm. I feel like this one is blatantly Christian.
All right, Dan, tell us why you cried.
Well, I it is blatantly Christian. You're right. That's I mean, you know, the singing to the Lord, you know, search my heart at the end, you know. Mm-hmm. I love this song because I think that it is, like I said, it celebrates these good things mm-hmm. about Christianity. Yeah. This idea of love from a parental figure, you know, looking at this God or Jesus, your deity as like a loving, doting parent that like nothing I do is ever going to be good enough, but you love me anyway. Mm-hmm. Like there's something really great and I enjoy about that mentality, and I think that it's not like beating you over the head mm-hmm. with the religiosity, because I think it earns it with the first verse where it's just actually grounded, talking about a mother getting dandelions from their child. She sees love where anyone would see weeds. Mm-hmm. Like I think the metaphor is strong. I think it's well written. I think the horns are good.
A flickering of yellow light within his mother's eyes, she holds them to her heart, keeping them where they'll be safe. Clutched within her very marrow, dandelions in a vase. She sees love where anyone else would see weeds.
I don't know. I was struggling with this, and I actually think that I'm comfortable saying that I think it's the best Christian song that I've ever heard. I think it's...
You might be right. I mean, as far as... And so my big takeaway from this was that this is probably the most, like, Christian, like, pure out praise song. And Reese actually does refer to this as a praise song on the live album. But this is the most praise songy type song that we've ever done that is actually nice and loving and not creepy and bitchy and like, I don't know. Yeah. There's something very nice to it, and you're right. It really does earn it, like, that first verse earns that metaphor, and there's something beautiful in that metaphor. And it's psychologically, that's the reason that Christianity appeals to a lot of people, you know, is because there is mm-hmm. that, there's that loving deity that's kind of like a parent, a parental figure that you make some mud pies and the parents like, these are the best things I've ever tasted.
Yeah. And even though, you know, the last part of the song is like, you know, Lord, I give my heart to you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, you know, this, even though it's that, and I'm not religious anymore in my life, but I can still listen to that song and still enjoy it in maybe not exactly the same way I did when I was in my teens, but still, I can appreciate the metaphor and the point of the song and the message, even if I'm not Christian.
Yeah.
And I think that's a testament to like it being a well-made Christian song.
Yeah.
Because other ones I fucking can't. Like Delirious, I think I mentioned them already. Like, I could sing of your love forever. I have no interest in hearing that ever again.
No, exactly. And
Breakfast Club, can't go back.
And for that reason, Five Iron Frenzy is, I think, one of, at least in this period where I have an experience with, Five Iron Frenzy has to be some of the best songwriters in Christian music.
And to think that they were in their 20s.
Yeah.
Mid-20s, early 20s. Yeah. It's nuts.
Yeah. Well, going back to that other song, I mean, just thinking of Jeff writing the lyrics, she's 21, one of the youngest in the band. And that's like pretty deep thoughts about things and where they stand in the world and stuff, you know.
And even going back to that that song, like there's the logically there's room for all questions, you know, as part of one of the choruses. It's like giving the audience permission to question things, like even from a religious spiritual standpoint, is that's dense, that's heavy.
Yeah. Right.
And again, a 21-year-old writing it.
Right. And once again, just amazing. Not something that I think that most Christian evangelicals had space in their mind to consider. Because I mean, it wasn't this exact age, it was a couple years later for me, but I went through a very doubting period, and I was basically told to like shut up and trust God, you know, like that was it wasn't like keep doubting, you'll find the way. It was just shut up and trust God.
Yeah. What was the way my youth group leader put it? It's like, if like you be certain of these things, and if you're not certain, then pray to be certain.
Right, yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Like,
that is gross.
Looking back, it's so unnurturing and so so rude.
It is, and it's dismissive of the humanity of the people going through that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is one cringy line in this song, I think, which I don't like, which is towards the end where he says, create in me something clean.
Hmm.
I don't like it. Just, I think it implies the... There's too much implication that there's nothing clean, you know, that you're just, that we're just dirty, you know?
Hmm. That's an interesting perspective. I don't see the line like that, but I can see where you're coming from.
How do you take the line?
I take the line to be like, there are some clean things inside me, but create something. Yeah, you might be right. Maybe I looked at it. I don't know. I never heard it as implying that there's nothing else that's clean.
Okay.
But maybe it is. Maybe that is the reading.
Maybe
of
that
it.
Just comes from all of my apologetics reading over the few years after this, that's all that talks about.
That could be.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, the song's catchy, too. We've talked about the lyrics. We haven't talked actually about how it sounds. But
yeah.
And I'll be honest, this one is pretty Christian for me. And so I didn't want it to get stuck in my head, but it did after re-listening to this. And
this
so,
song has been stuck in my head for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's just a catchy song.
The horn stuff is really good. The way it comes in and like stings.
The horn.
Like the burp, the blurts.
Kind the of. Horn hooks are good. And the vocal hooks, honestly, are really good, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the vocal, I think the vocal and the lyrics kind of work together. And you're right. It just creates this really beautiful thing in the song. Yeah.
Like a dandelion.
A flower among the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right, Jay, take us somewhere else.
The next song is One Girl Army. And I will say this is the one I remembered most for some reason. I think because it's pretty fast. And I was definitely in that mode of like, okay, what are the fast fire and songs? I'm going to listen to those and skip the slow ones. Lyrically, I remembered nothing about it. I really remembered nothing else, but it was fast and upbeat, and I liked that.
Yeah. And Dan, you said you don't like, this is what I call Reese's Red Hot Chili Peppers voice, which may be unfair. It may be like more like a Too Fly for a White Guy voice. I don't know what this voice is, but this is a weird voice. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like it. It turns me off a little bit. I love the opening of the song. Mm-hmm. Like the horn part at the open is great. Then those vocals come in and I want to go away. I just want to turn it off. But if I wait to the chorus,
the chorus
then everything
away.
Is okay.
Yeah, the chorus, it does go away.
But those vocals, I hate that voice.
And I don't know what the voice is supposed, like, I don't know where he's pulling that from or why he's doing that.
Yeah, I was trying to think about it, like if there's a larger point that I can see to it, because it's not like on other songs. It's not like he jumps back and forth on this album for like some kind of a character thing.
True, really. But he has done that voice in at least once before on I don't remember when, but he's done at least that voice at least once on one of the previous albums.
But does that other time, I don't know if you remember what song it was, but does it give you any insight into like what it might, like what this voice might be?
I don't remember. Yeah.
An alter ego.
I just remember it not being surprising when it happened.
I was surprised listening back and I was offended.
Yeah. So one of the things that we talked about when we talked about the adventures of the OC Supertones is just how simple the horns were on that album. And really
insanely simple,
right?
Yes. And you know that they're always just the same. They're always just doing the same thing. It's pretty much always these like, burp, you know, burst, right? And the horns actually play, this is probably the song on this album that where the horns play the least part. And they're still wonderful on this song. And only that, There's horn harmonies going on while there's vocal harmonies going on over them in this song. And it's just that just I mean the songwriting talent of these guys is fantastic and you know, because I like complex music because it I have a very active and anxious mind and I like things that fill up my mind, and so simple things are not so great in my brain, but these complicated things where all these things are going on at the same time, I just love
them. Mm-hmm. And I think they probably don't get enough credit for a lot of that because Well, maybe just because they were a Christian ska band.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely got pigeonholed, you know, because you do have things like the Supertones that are coming out with just this really simple stuff.
And I don't think that was just in the Adventures, the Amazing Adventures album. I think that might have been a consistent thing with
them. You know, and Supertones Strike Back is a better album, but it's not more complicated. And, you know, the song...
That, speaking of cringy lines, I think it's on the Supertones Strike Back song that... Protect your neck, Supertone Strike Back.
Yep.
Terrible. Doing a Wu-Tang reference.
Yeah. Boo. You know, thinking back on this EP, I appreciated kind of putting it in the proper timeline because they just finished that Ska Against Racism tour, which was like no Christian bands did anything like that. Like, that was like a big deal. They've toured a lot. They've released two albums. They're like, I kind of feel like they're kind of at their height right here. Like, they're just really good. And you're right. Like, these horn parts are complex. They wrote this album in 2 weeks, and this is what they did. Like, if they'd had 2 months, who knows what would have happened. Like, it's really good. And I think I didn't realize that back in the day, but listening to it now, I'm a lot more impressed.
I think that this is probably the most underdeveloped song on this album. I think that this if they had not written this album in 2 weeks, this is the song that would have gotten more advanced before they recorded it.
Yeah, on week three they would have gotten rid of that voice.
Yeah. Yep.
I hope so.
Like, this doesn't play. Dan's gonna be pissed about this in 20 years.
and so I was really. I was really excited to see, because I never listened to the live album when it came out. I was really excited to see that this song opens the live album that was the next release of theirs. And I thought to myself, maybe they've done some more with the song. But
no, nope. They didn't. It's same just, vocals?
Yep.
Everything's
the exact same.
Let me pull this up here. I think that this is... Oh, no, never mind. I got it wrong. I thought that this was their most played song from this album on Spotify, but no. I had my numbers wrong.
No,
it's definitely Evil Plan.
Yes, followed quickly by Dandelions and Get Your Right Gear.
And I think at least maybe like 1/6 of the Dandelions plays might have been me.
Just after working
I
out.
Had that,
working
after out. I had that tier session on the bike, I had to keep playing it. Think about how my parents saw Weeds when I brought them Dandelions. All right.
So,
all right. You guys can be Philistines about Sweet Talking Women, by the way, but I just want to say, ELO, I have all your albums.
Okay. Well, see, that explains a lot. But yeah, because I, just like Dan, I skipped this song pretty much every time. And I'll be honest to you, I skipped it a few times even preparing for this. So, Clifton, you know, tell us why this is so good.
It's just good. I don't have a reason. It's just good. I mean, it's a really enthusiastic take on this song.
I want to be fair to you and say that I don't hate it. And and listening back to it, I think it's fun. But it feels a little out of place with the rest of the songs. Yeah. And I don't know. I might not be all that into covers. I mean,
oh, me either.
Some of my friends were really big into like Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. Yeah, and I don't know.
I generally don't like covers, so that's why when there's a cover that I do like, I'm very impressed by it.
Some of those Less Than Jake albums I can get rid of. Mm-hmm. Yes. The Insiders, Scalleluia. I nothing against ELO too. I'm fine with ELO.
So Reese was a big fan of ELO and ABBA, by the way. So that's why we get ELO here, and we'll even hear some ABBA references, or not references, but we'll get some ABBA influence on a later song.
On their next album, they did a cover of Waterloo, right?
Did they?
No, I'm just
yeah. We're like,
I don't think so. They did. They did. What's the? It's Not Unusual. That's the song they did on the live album.
The Tom Jones?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. That felt out of place. Yeah. Mainly because they stopped the show and the drummer was like, "Hey, Reese, I've been having trouble with the girls."
Listen, I like a lot of Five Iron Frenzy stuff. I'm not sure I'm going to go to bat for their sense of humor.
No.
Yeah, I'm with you.
When you talk about like a cringy line in that Dandelion song, I mean, we're going to get to the rock opera.
Right. There is some stuff to talk about there, yes.
That's cringy as hell.
Yeah. All right. Well, also things that we're probably not going to talk about in depth here is When I Go Out.
Why not, Clifton?
Okay, let's do it, Jay. Let's dig in. Why do you think he makes mashed potatoes?
Yeah, I don't know. For the listeners that are not familiar with this song is all of how many seconds long? 10?
I'll play a short selection from this song.
Okay.
We don't have time for the whole thing, though, no. Right?
But I don't want to get sued either.
It's 10 seconds, I think.
Yes, 10 seconds long.
Yeah.
It's like the equivalent of like on a rap album, they have a skit.
Yeah. And I did remember this, though, because before I listened to the album, I named my notes. When I go out, I play in the street, I get hit by cars, something, something, I get hit by cars.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember what the song
I remembered it too.
Was.
Yeah. You didn't remember the mashed potatoes part of it, though.
Yeah. Mm.
That's interesting. It's interesting that all the banal parts of it you remember.
Right. But the quirky thing about it, I completely forgot.
Wow. Well, and it, weird. You know, you think back to the title of it, you know, Quantity is Job One. Is this just a song they stuck in to add more songs to it because it's an EP?
I feel like it's a 3 a.m. song.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's on another track. 10 seconds.
Yep.
I think that's an interesting thought that it's playing in with the title of the album.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's it's probably just an inside joke too.
Right.
That they think is funny that is on their album and we just don't get to laugh because we don't know what it is.
As a 16, 17 year old, I thought it was very cute.
Yeah. And I thought funny. It was cool for some reason back then too. Yes.
No accounting for being a teenager.
Well, let's move to the song that does have more depth that is surprisingly relevant now. Get Your Riot Gear.
Yes,
man.
And I already said it earlier, but this was about, I guess, riots that happened after the Super Bowl, which I guess in early 98 in Denver, that I don't obviously remember because a lot's happened since then. But evidently the cops were pretty brutal on people.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of that and like the WTO protests that ended in some police brutality. I think that this song was actually too mature for me at the time.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Like I don't think I really understood it. And looking back on it now, listening to it, I'm like, this is outstanding. This is so good. The like, if you want a riot, go get your riot gear. That kind of thing. It's so. Fuck, it's good.
Yeah. Something passive, something not. Billy clubs, I'll call the SWAT.
Rabbit dogs without a leash. Is this how you keep the peace? You want riots? Wear your riot gear. You want violence? Then shoot some tear gas in the air.
Definitely, even at 21 or 26 or however Reese was old when he wrote this, I was not mature enough to make the connection of if police expect violence and they show that they expect violence, they're going to get violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming all of us, you know, white guys grew up in the suburbs, you know, something like that. Yeah. Like we had no experience with this either. Like, no. You know, like we'd been exposed to anything like this. So yeah, I completely did not understand this either. Way over my head at the time.
Yep. Unfortunately, ahead of its time, maybe, what's the opposite of preaching to the choir?
Yeah. And I, my first note was, this song sounds awful prophetic today.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't new at the time, you know, when it's, you know, obviously police have been using these tactics on civil rights protesters, you know, since the 50s and 60s, sicking dogs on them just to make them look violent. But for white kids coming out of suburban neighborhoods, this is, I don't know how. I mean, there's no way for me to have experienced this the way they did at the time. And the only reason they experienced this, because if you look at interviews where they're talking about this song, the experience that they tell is that they're like, this isn't even cop bashing. This is just, they were actually in downtown when this happened. And they were like, nothing was going on. The police just showed up in riot gear and started acting violent. And everyone was like, you're going to be violent to us. We're going to be violent to you.
Yeah, I mean, whether or not it's their intention, they did strike on something, yeah. Or they stumbled upon something that is very relevant with police brutality issues.
Yeah.
And again, I think that is something, that song is so, it's well-written, the point is valuable, and I think it gets lost because they're a Christian ska band.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty unfortunate.
Even though this is a swing song.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And I want to say one thing. Everyone gets one swing song, because if you're not Glenn Miller, you don't have more than one swing song in you. So just one. You only get one.
I just had a terrible flashback of a church. We had swing lessons.
Whoa.
God, that was so bad.
You were allowed to touch girls in church?
Only in the context of swinging.
Swing. Oof, lessons, that's pretty progressive. At church. Wow. Okay.
It was bad.
Yeah. There's two interesting things. First off, I want to read an interview that this is Lenora talking. So this is her talking about.
I think I might have found this same interview.
Yeah. So this is the one about the next album. This is about All the Hype Money Can Buy.
Okay. I'm not sure.
But it touches on the subject here, and I wanted to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
So she says, I think the main reason we tackle such big subjects on this album is that we're not quite sure if this is our last album or what. So if it's our last, we want to go out saying what we want to say and not be afraid of not being put in Christian in a certain Calvary bookstore, is what she says. We finally feel that we have the freedom to say whatever we want to say. And if we want to talk about corporate America or legalism in the church or whatever is really, really on our hearts, this is the album to do it, because we finally have enough big audience. And we also have a big enough audience that it wouldn't even matter to us. We don't care how many albums we sell.
Yeah. I think this is the same interview, but the things that I was latching on to were the parts where she talks about how great it would be to live in communism or socialism. Yes.
So I was going to get into that, because she comes out strong socialist or communist in that interview.
I was so blown away, because when I re-listened to Get Your Riot Gear, I was like, this is a political thing that, or at least there's a stance here that maybe I haven't fully explored with Five Iron Frenzy. And so I read some interviews and I found this one. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This is like, and it's nuts. There's the later in that interview too. She talks about like how the best way to show God's love isn't to like try and push people into being Christians. It's to try and deal with their basic human needs. It's like,
yeah,
this is amazing.
Yeah, Jay, this is the one I sent you just last night, actually.
Right,
this
and I didn't. I interview. Just started reading it. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a fantastic.
Now this was
we'll
internet, in. Not in like you know CCM magazine or something. Because I think
it's a website called Band Doppler, but I only found it on the Wayback Machine. I don't know how you found it, Dan, but
that's the same. Yeah, I found a link to it, and it was in the it's in the archive.
Yeah. I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, it's a great interview with her.
Wow. It makes me want to go back in time and try to save their careers or something.
Right?
Like, they could be such a good influence on people.
I think it's this exact same thing, though, that I think this is the reason they had such a hard time in the industry, is because they're so different. They're you know, we have, you know, even the bands I love that I felt were progressive at the time, like Plank Eye and whatnot, they're arch conservatives compared to Lenore here talking about communism and you know, selling everything you own and creating a society. Yeah. Anyways.
They're also
I admire her all the more.
Well, and they're also on 5 Minute Walk, which is like
right
super Christian label. I mean, that has me scratching my head too.
I listened to an interview and I read some about that as well. And so first off, Frank Tate, who ran 5 Minute Walk, he was the manager for Prayer Chain. And Reese says that he's more of a businessman than a music person. But that he really cared about the kids, and he really just cared about the bands they put out had like good Christianity, basically. But you ready for this? Many times, Frank Tate would ask them to tone down the sting of their social justice lyrics so that their albums could make it into Christian bookstores. Ooh. Can we take a fucking minute and fucking think about what that fucking means? That you have to tone down. Hey! Don't too strongly imply that maybe the U.S. shouldn't have killed all those Native Americans and taken their land because evangelicals will get upset with you.
That's wild. I mean, it's such the inverse of like the stories of the like big record labels in the secular world.
Yeah.
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 Oh, wow.
But it sounded like he was supportive of them, but he just didn't want them to get blacklisted, basically.
I feel like that would have been the best thing for them. I think their careers would have actually gone better if they'd gotten blacklisted from
that. That would have been one of the most amazing. Like, can you imagine the dive that any of us would have gone on if, like, all of a sudden, Five Iron Frenzy was blacklisted from a Christian bookstore?
Right. Exactly. Like,
we would have to have done some serious reading.
It would have changed. I think. I bet I wouldn't have stopped listening to them.
I would not have
after this album.
Nope. It would have worked a lot harder to, you know, find their stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't this album. It goes back to their first album, they said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I apologize, Clifton, because I feel like I ask this question on almost every podcast, but like it makes you wonder if they had been on Tooth and Nail or some.
So
even just a,
they talk about that
edgier like a label that would have given them a little more freedom, you know?
So Reese thinks that Frank Tate did everything for them that he could have, that any record label could have done, and he was just absolutely supportive of them. And then it never became about money, which may have broken Five Iron Frenzy, honestly.
Hmm.
Because I think To the Note would have been too much of a business.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my perspective.
Probably not censor them as much.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's also curious to wonder, like, if like Christian music could be successful on a secular label. You know, we were talking earlier about it being a big cash cow. But I wonder if like it wouldn't be able to be marketed correctly in a profitable way outside of that circle.
So if you look at like Jars of Clay, for example,
oof.
They're actually on a sub label of Sony Music.
Mm-hmm.
So they get, it's a Christian sub-label, so they get the Christian circulation through that, but they also get distributed as a Sony project.
But I feel like they were also kind of crypto-Christian.
Yes.
With the, like, that Flood was on the radio.
Yeah.
And that was pretty Christian, but it also wasn't, like, in your face.
Right.
There's, like, Creed has, like, that plausible deniability.
Oh. Yes, which by the way, the Supertones did not have nice things to say about Jars of Clay for that reason.
That's awesome. Oh God, do they have any shit to talk about DC Talk?
I don't think I remember that. I think maybe that was too far in the past for them. Well, although I don't know. Yeah, I mean DC Talk was still going at that time, but they don't think they were relevant anymore. All right, anything else about this song?
Yeah, we got way off.
It's a swing song. Did we talk about the music?
I'll be honest, I wish it wasn't a swing song. I love the lyrics. I could do without the swing, but you know.
It's only swing for about the first third. It goes into a pretty standard punk rock song after that.
Well, you want to talk about the untimely death of Brad, which I feel like is kind of the last real song.
Real song, yes. So first off, it starts off with
I want to say that this is the last song. I turn it off after this every time.
Yeah, me too.
It depends on what mood I'm in. Okay. So first off, I want to start off with the, there's backwards talking before the song starts. So I went and turned it the right side. So here, I'm going to play it for you guys.
Is it a satanic message?
Ooh. It is. You ready?
Brad is dead. Let's kill Brad.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. Brad is dead. Let's kill Brad.
From what I understand, this was like a joke about, like, there was a rumor that Brad had died.
Yeah.
Right?
So to figure this out, I went to the dark corners of the internet and read an anonymous message board. So you guys ready for what I found?
This is on the dark web? Is it the Christian Scott dark web?
Just a dark corner of the web.
All right.
Not a page I've ever heard of before. So this is what I got. And the names have been changed here to protect the innocent.
Okay.
All right. Scoffer Life says, it's a song about how a rumor was going around on the internet that Brad wasn't in the band anymore because, spelled B-E-C-U-Z, the trumpet player for the W's filled in for him on one gig, so people started gossiping. Five Iron Fanatic says, you almost have the whole story. Brad missed a show. I didn't know about Val filling in for him, but Brad missed because he was sick. The next day, the internet, there were tons of rumors circulating that Brad was dead, that the band was breaking up and other stuff. Fire and Frenzy is awesome. And then Porkland says, lulz, dumbass, he was getting married, not sick. And then MAGA Forever says, Five Iron Frenzy sucks. I wish Brad really was dead.
Oh.
Wait, that was MAGA some of the, Forever?
Some of that was made up.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember this rumor, obviously, because I was young and I don't know, I wasn't on that message board.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I listening to this, I appreciated this amount of humor.
Yeah.
This is about as much as I want them to be doing.
Yeah.
I always like this level of humor for me was always good with Five Iron Frenzy. The rock opera goes a little far.
It's a little indulgent.
Yeah, it is. But this level of humor is good. I agree.
Yeah, like that isn't the trumpet playing haunting on this album. And if you see Brad, give him condolences. You know, like that's good fun.
It is nice and just enough sharpness to the wit there, yes.
Mm-hmm. But it's kind of trite, though. You know, like it's in terms of like some of the other songs have a lot more impact.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a little bit fast foodish kind of, you know, it's like empty Very. Calories. That's the word I'm kind of looking for.
And on that same note, you know, I said that I always listen to the album without vocals, and this is a boring song without vocals.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I think this is the one that got stuck in my head more. Like you were saying the Dandelions got stuck in your head.
Really? Yeah.
And for me, maybe it's because I've heard Dandelions a bunch, and it wasn't like a new earworm. But this was the one that when I go back and listened, it's like if I'm laying in bed trying to fall asleep, I might think about Brad dying.
Okay. Yeah. Other than that, it's kind of a boring song. I do want to give you guys the kind of ABBA-esque thing that I found here. Let me fast forward to it. Maybe that's more Queen. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a chorus. It's symphonic.
Yes. They were big fans of Queen, too, though. That's that song. I don't think it's really worth talking more about it.
Yeah, I don't really have. I don't have many thoughts about it. I mean, I enjoy it though.
Like
yeah.
It is also kind of prophetic as well, in that it's kind of this about, you know, how disinformation spreads so quickly on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. If you take it outside of the song individually being about this rumor and being about how people are dumb and believe stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. That is also prescient.
Yeah. So in these two songs, like, you know, between. Get Your Riot Gear and the Untimely Death of Brad, Five Iron Frenzy in 1998 kind of predicted our present.
Maybe they had an evil plan to save the world and no one listened because they're a Christian ska band.
It's still in the works behind the scenes.
Don't listen to nonsense you hear on the internet and let's de-escalate police situations. Those two things could have saved us a whole lot of trouble in the last years.
Well, Let's jump ahead and talk about Dan's favorite songs, 9 through 16, These Are Not My Pants, the rock opera, which really, to me, when I think rock opera, I don't think the same song just played like, you know, 10 different ways, which is really it's more what this song. Is. Well, okay.
It's variations on a theme.
All right. Fair. Maybe it's because I skipped the songs like Dan, so I can't speak to them as well.
I definitely think this has to do with the quantity is job one.
Yeah, definitely.
I have honestly nothing to say about this because as I went back and listened to the album, I think I listened to the first two and then I was just like, I'm done. I'm out of here.
Yep.
Because I'm not listening to all those stupid songs about pants.
I listened to all of these several times. Come on. So Reese does tell a story in an interview that basically he has a Roland pocket sequencer and that you can like basically arrange a song and it plays it with all the instruments. And that's what this is. He just arranged, you know, a bunch of songs in different styles and they sing to them basically.
It's just a meta joke. I don't care for that's kind of the way I feel. It's like, yeah, right.
Most of these are bad though. The jazz one I think is problematic. Did you guys listen to the jazz one again?
Is that the one with the weird voice?
Yeah, and it's a bit racy.
I got Billy, Bobby, Jerry, Philly, Dilly, ooh, chilly, pants, ooh,
little bit of ooh. Yeah.
Oh.
I have a vague memory of that.
Yeah. All right, that was enough.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
See, this is where it's like, okay, you did this album in 2 weeks. I'm going to allow this.
Yes,
right.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's like you have so much goodwill from the other songs that like I'll accept that this is on the album and I will not hate you for it, but I'm never going to listen to it. I'm glad they had fun.
I think one problem though is my memory of Five Iron is a lot of that silly stuff and less of like the songs the about stuff. Police brutality. You know what I mean? That's one of the issues. When you do that a lot, people tend to only think of that.
And it was something I was worried about going back into listening to this, and I was quickly, you know, with that first song, you're just like, oh, right, they're a very good band.
Yeah, and I think they did themselves no favors with that perception, with the, like, dressing up as Star Trek characters at the show, and they kind of acted pretty goofy and silly. That kind of masks a lot of the more serious musicianship that they had.
But I think maybe they're just being themselves.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm glad they had fun. I just don't care.
Yeah.
Well, overall thoughts on this album?
I love it. I refuse to apologize. Not that you guys are asking me to, but I feel like this is it's really nice to be able to talk about this with some folks who, you know, kind of get why there's value in it, as opposed to like having to defend, like, no, it's not that, Christian. You don't understand. There's good stuff here,
right?
And it was great to revisit, and I'm worried because there is a part of me that thinks like maybe I should check back in on some of these other things. I'm not going to go with the Newsboys. I don't care.
Nope, you can
I don't
skip
care
Newsboys.
If I misunderstood that song. I'm not listening to it again. But I wonder. I think that they're probably. Like Five Iron Frenzy is probably special, you know, like they're probably something that can be revisited more than some of these other bands that I listened to at the time. Like, I don't think that T-Bone or Christafari are necessarily going to hold up.
Oh, wow. T-Bone. I haven't thought about that in a long time. Okay. Wow.
If you guys want to do an episode about T-Bone, have me back.
I don't think either of us ever came about. Did you listen to that, Jay, at the time?
I do know that song. Lyrical Assassin. My lyrics go, oh, shoot, what does he say? Boom, boom, boom. And then all the demons get struck. Or so. I don't know. Anyway,
that sounds right.
I'm butchering T-Bone, but yeah.
That makes a lot more memes in the Christian Music Recovery Group make a lot more sense to me.
Yep, there you go.
I didn't know that song.
What about, we haven't talked about like the cover artwork or the you know, the packaging, anything else kind of not music related but just related to the album?
I think it's really excellent. So this is done by a friend of theirs, from what I understand, all the robot paintings and whatnot. And I don't know if the robot is friendly to these little guys or if he's eating these little guys or chasing them, but I think it's excellent.
Yeah, it is a good aesthetic. I'm not sure exactly what the theme is or anything, but when I saw it, I remembered it immediately. Like, it took me back.
And the theme doesn't come off as we did this album in 2 weeks.
No.
So that's good.
Right.
For now. Sure.
It's also clear that 5 Minute Walk is spending some money on this. Like it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's multiple pages. It's stapled together. So it's big enough to have that. Yeah. It's got the
full color.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And there's a whole like 2 pages of thank yous and stuff. And so, yeah, this was not kind of a budget release like some of the ones we've looked at.
No.
I'm looking at these thank yous, trying to see if there's any of these other bands that I remember.
Yeah. So they have a section just for bands.
Yeah.
And just for bands, I think.
There's MXPX in there. Mm-hmm. MU330. That wasn't a Christian yep. band.
No. A lot of these are bands that they went on that tour.
Well, here is a
Sixpence.
Here's a Christian ska band that I've never heard, but I'm pretty sure they're Christian in the thank yous, the Skapostles.
Ooh, I never heard that one.
Yeah. So
MC Hammer.
They're thinking MC Hammer in here. So there you go.
That's nice. Oh, the Dingies. I remember them.
Yeah. The Dingies were good. Or
wow. My memory is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's another band that was actually talented.
So, I might have to go check back in on them because I remember the name and I remember really liking one of their songs, but I don't remember what it was.
Listen to the first album. That's probably the one you listen to.
Okay, I'm going to get into this as soon as we're done here.
Okay.
So just sorry, 2 others I noticed. There's a band, I have no idea what they sound like, called Messenger and Raiders of the Lost. And a band called Tard on here, which I'm thinking was probably, oof, yeah, that doesn't age well.
I'm glad I was not in that band.
Right.
P.O.D. They got P.O.D. yep. in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really happy to see that they have the Blamed and Left Out in here. That's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kind of everything.
Yeah. All right. All right. So we usually do a Where Are They Now, but I didn't want to do that for this episode. I wanted to talk about one thing kind of quickly here, which is that right after this album, we know where one of the people went. So these guys are still around, by the way. They put out an album this year. But one of the guys, right after this album came out, Scott left the band. And he, at the time, it was basically put out there that he wanted to spend more time with his wife and his kids.
But in reality, he left because of that Real Big Fish song, Scott's a Dork.
Right. He was just he was devastated, and he could, like, the public exposure was hard on him.
Yeah. It's hard to be called a dork.
Especially in those days.
Yeah.
You know, it's not cool like it is today. Mm-hmm. No. So, basically, he left because he left the faith. He was not a Christian anymore. And I want to just discuss that of all the bands, I feel like Five Iron Frenzy was the most honest with its fans. But even they couldn't say, hey, Scott left because he's not a Christian anymore.
Hmm. Do you have any idea if that was like Scott's decision?
And I don't, right? And so that's why it's hard to say anything specific about this, because I don't know if Scott said, hey, you guys, this is personal to me. I don't want to talk about this yet. And maybe that's true, because, you know, I mean, when I left the faith, I spent years just not talking about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think especially, like, I'm getting the sense that we probably have fairly similar church experiences, and, like, you know, one of the things that you have is a guilt of mm-hmm. leaving, of, like,
yeah.
somehow you leaving hurts the people around you or whatever.
Yeah.
It could hurt their faith, and then yes. you're dragging them to hell with you.
Yeah.
And I could see being in a Christian ska band that's super successful, mm. like wanting to keep that kind of private for a bit until you process some of that stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know though. I'm just guessing that maybe that's
yeah,
some of it.
And I hope that's where things were, and it wasn't just, hey, we're gonna, because I hope what they didn't think is, this is too dangerous an idea to put out there, that someone can leave the faith. You know,
that seems off brand for them. And I think agree. So. I hope that's not what they were thinking.
The nice, I guess, ending to the story though is he's back in the band now, right?
He is. Yeah, in the reincarnated band, he is, but he's playing bass now, not guitar, because they did replaced him on guitar, but they when they reformed in 2012, whatever it was, he joined back in, but as the bassist.
Well, how yeah. about that? That's great. Do we know if he's gotten back to God?
I don't think so. I think that was one of the things they talked about when they got back together. Is said, like, you know, we're kind of like big tent type of band, and we just like care for each other, and we're not going to let that stuff like get in the way.
because he's not the only one. So the band actually broke up. They've been talking about breaking up for a while, but in 2003 they broke up when the drummer also left the faith and was leaving the band, and they just decided that it wasn't worth fighting for the band anymore.
You know, and now that I think about it though, Clifton, like, you rarely hear about that with these Christian bands, right? Like, mm-hmm. you rarely hear about members leaving the faith. So just the fact that we're even hearing about it, you know, gives me a little hope that they're more honest than most on that.
Yeah, I bet a lot of other bands would just be like, well, one of our members is a demon now and we don't exist.
Right.
All right, let's wrap this episode up.
I'd like to give it all the awards. It's definitely something that I wish that I could get other secular exclusive friends to understand. Yeah. Like the quality of this album.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I think it's been an uphill battle. I don't think anyone will ever listen.
I will say, so we invited you on because I've heard you talk about Favre and Frenzy on Knowledge Fight. And whenever you bring it up, Jordan shut you down pretty fast by calling you a dork.
Yeah, much like Scott. Yeah. He, my co-host on Knowledge Fight, Jordan, is a little cooler, and he didn't have the same sort of evangelical Christian root. So right. He does have a lot of religion in his past, but you know, it might be more sort of church songs and hymns, mm-hmm. as opposed to the sort of pop music that came along with our upbringings. And I think he should be ashamed of himself. I think that Five Iron Frenzy has a lot of good stuff.
But if I agree.
But now I'm willing to accept that I should be called a dork if I bring up like the Supertones. I'll own that. That's fine.
Agree.
But I'll fight back on Five Iron. I think I feel much more secure in that, having talked about it for an hour with you guys.
They are more than a step above.
Our next episode, I'm going to scream at Jordan about this.
Please.
Dan, before we wrap everything up here, I wanted to ask you about your experience growing up in youth group, but I've been so busy, I haven't had time to like sit down and write questions, honestly.
Sure. Is there anything anything in particular that you're curious about?
I guess I wonder if there's anything looking back that you think still has a weight hanging over you all these years later from that time in your life.
It's becoming less and less so as I get older and I have, you know, more experience in therapy under my belt. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of fear and guilt that I didn't realize was being imparted to me. Yeah. And, you know, processing a lot of that stuff is fairly difficult. But the one thing that I was always like a really rough memory, but now is hilarious and I can have more fun with is my youth group. Were you the right age to read I Kiss Dating Goodbye?
Oh, man. We talked about this on an episode. Oh, yeah.
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 That was our time, yes.
Oh, okay, geez. So our youth group got into that, or at least the leader decided that, you know, he was going to push it on us. And so the idea that they had was that you're not supposed to date until you're ready to get married, because to do so would be cheating on your future spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got pretty popular. Little did I know that everyone was banging around and pretending to go along with this stuff while I took it seriously. one night, the youth group had a big ceremony where we all got married to Jesus, and we actually had promise rings, and we walked down an aisle, and like, it looking back, it's one of the most bizarre things that, like, now that I'm an adult, imagining being around this and kids doing this and not stopping it, it just seems so bizarre to me that these adults were like, yeah, this is fine. This is a cool thing that isn't going to be traumatic.
Wow.
How old do you think you were?
I think I was probably 15, because I don't think I could drive. Because I think I would have left if I could drive.
Right.
Actually, I had a moment, like, before the ceremony really got underway where I started crying and I ran away because I couldn't process what was going on. It was so intensely fucked up.
That's traumatic.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I didn't realize I didn't realize how fucked up it was at the time.
Yeah.
And so like, but part of my subconscious did. So I ran away I ran and sat outside, and then one of the youth group leaders and I had a chat, and he talked me down. And it was very nice. He was very supportive, and I think I got the sense that he thought it was weird, too, but it was just like, what are you going to do? And so I went back inside, and if I could drive, I think I would have ran to my car and probably...
We'd have been gone before he got out there for you.
Yeah. But yeah, so that kind of stuff, that vibe certainly is something that sticks with me. Like those...
Interesting.
The normalizing of that kind of thing is so... weird that that I lived in that, and it just seemed like this is something that people do,
and you know, we're both a few years older than you. The true love, I guess dating goodbye hit my senior year, and I remember in my youth group the youth pastor's wife led a Bible study for the girls on that book, but the guys really didn't get exposed to it until later.
Oh wow.
And so in my senior year, my girlfriend had, the girl I dated had joined our church after that Bible study. And so I was dating her, which was the only relationship I had in high school. I was not cool about it, so this is not, but anyways. But at the time I felt pretty cool because every other guy was like, how are you dating somebody? None of the girls will date, none of the girls will date anybody right now. So I felt pretty cool at the time that
she missed that lesson.
Yes. I have a feeling that she would have thought that was bullshit anyways, but
I really wish that in hindsight, like one of the things that would have saved me a lot of trouble is if other people in the youth group would have made it more clear to me that they're like, we don't really believe all this stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I thought that everyone did. And it was really disillusioning when I realized like, oh, I could have gone to church and still done all kinds of crazy nonsense.
I also only learned later, because I'm also a dork, that everyone was fucking and doing drugs behind the scenes also. So I didn't, you know, yeah. What are you gonna do?
I think that was actually part of my path out, was making some friends with some people who smoked weed and hanging out with them and realizing like, I don't know if I actually believe this stuff.
That's nice.
It really helped.
Well, thank you very much, Dan.
Thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
And remind everyone where they can find you.
Knowledgefight.com is our website, and all of our stuff's on iTunes and all the.
All right. Because we have so many more listeners than you do. So.
I feel like you guys have a very important podcast that people need to destigmatize Christian music.
It's very niche.
Yeah, definitely niche.
All right, Dan, well, thank you for joining us. Enjoy your evening.
Thanks. Yeah, man. Thank you. So, Clifton, what are we listening to next time?
All right, Jay, I decided that it's time to stop all this bullshit about listening to good stuff. And we're going to go back to an oldie but a goodie. Oldie but not a goodie. Oldie but... We're going to go back to an oldie. Audio Adrenaline by Audio Adrenaline.
Oh, wow. The first one. So, if you thought you knew Audio Adrenaline, you know, Bloom and Don't Censor Me and all that stuff. No, this is before that. This is a deep cut.
Yeah. Whew, okay. I don't remember the albums I did listen to, and I did not listen to this album, so I have no clue what to expect.
Yeah, I did. In sixth grade, I thought this was really cool. So you're going to learn a lot about what I thought was cool back then.
All right. In sixth grade, I thought Brooks and Dunn was cool.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Your Music Saved Us.
If you enjoyed your time with us, please leave us a review or share this episode on the social media of your choice. Or you can probably follow us at Your Music Saved Us, or email us at yourmusicsavedus@gmail.com.
The music in this episode is the work of Five Iron Frenzy and is used with apologies, not permission.
Yeah, go to fiveironfrenzy.com and find out how to buy their stuff. Like I said, they had a new album out this year. Go find it, listen to it. It's good. It's not Five Iron Frenzy that you remember, but it's still good music.
And check out Knowledge Fight.
Oh yeah, Knowledge Fight. Give Dan a listen. It's a great episode, great podcast, especially if you have ever heard of Alex Jones.
I was wondering if we'd make it the whole way through without mentioning him.
So, now we just have the podcast to do.
Woo!
From the New York Times featured.
No, don't do that. I know that they just put out another album. I saw that in my looking around, which blew my mind. I was like, I can't believe it.
And it's actually, I listened to a few songs. It's really not bad.
Yeah, I didn't hate it either. I think I made it like five tracks in before I was like, I'm going to listen to something else. Right. But it was still, I didn't dislike it.
No, and it reminds me of kind of like later NoFX and Offspring type stuff, you know, where like they are less punk, but more, you know, I don't know, just more like generic rock or something like that. But
they've mellowed a bit.
Yeah, yeah. But it didn't sound like Five Iron Frenzy to me, though, but mm-mm. It was still good.
Not quite the same, no.
Yeah, because they have a very distinct sound at this period, the period that we're going to be talking about. At least I think so.
Well, all right, let's start us? Because I feel like we're already talking about it. Okay. All right. So I'm doing the opening, right, Clifton?
Go for it.